Something that is written in prophecy, they don't even believe. Love is pure reality. Come let us
Bathrop Spears Broadsides. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org, and our phone connection is 831-427-3772 if you'd like to call in. Locally, that's 427-FRSC, Freak Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norse, and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. Special guest Mike Rhodes from Fresno, announcing the impending multimillion-dollar settlement with homeless people and attorneys for destruction of homeless property in Fresno, and confirming, perhaps making permanent, an injunction that bans Fresno from doing what Santa Cruz does routinely, destroy homeless property without setting it aside, storing it, giving people a chance to reclaim it when it is seized by people like Chief Ranger John Wallace and his minions here in Santa Cruz County. That'll be at 7 o'clock. Stay tuned.
No one's gonna treat her boy that way. No one really thought thought about how mother might react, proud to put her instinct on display. She slapped a few more doctors since that day.
And he shall be.
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 The doctors and the nurses couldn't bear to watch the pain. Tried to stay outside the battle zone. 67 hours she spent waging that campaign, pushing through the spasms on her own. And she sure as hell will use it when he's grown.
And he shall be.
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 He shall be.
Duck, one perfect little egg. Duck grows perfect little legs. Duck turns into something that's a perfect little swimmer. Duck, one night of perfect love. Duck, one night was just enough. Duck, if she could just not shove, she'd love to keep him in her.
The father sat beside her wondering how much he could take, but knew to keep his body out of range. 3 days of breathing, trying hard to stay awake. This was not a pattern he could change. And no one enjoyed watching the exchange.
And he shall be.
And he shall be.
And he shall be.
He shall be.
Duck, 10 perfect little toes.
Duck, 1 perfect little nose.
Duck, forgive the purple prose. They couldn't have foreseen this.
Duck, 4 perfect little limbs.
Duck, 3 perfect little chins.
Duck, 2 perfect earlobes and a perfect little penis.
Put aside the hand-me-downs, find the purest cotton. Nothing but the best will ever touch this baby's bottom. This could be the greatest child ever to be born.
Never mind the baby bonnet, where's the crown of thorns?
Duck, is this the second son?
Duck, born now for everyone.
Duck, most people cannot tell one baby from another.
Duck, for just another youth.
Duck, to suck, burp, and poo.
Duck, is this the child who might never leave his mother?
Slept the baby so the mother slept him back. This was not a mom to be ignored. No one really saw it as a personal attack. This was not a lapse they could afford.
And someday soon they hope she'll cut the cord.
And he shall be.
And he shall be.
And he shall be.
And that was Uncle Banzai. The name of the song, Doug's Birthday Song. Name of the album, Doug. This whole CD is about Doug. Uncle Banzai is a group I sometimes play from the 80s mostly, but this one is actually from 2000. And you know, what does it have to do with civil rights for poor people or police abuse? Not much. I just like the music. But hey, you're invited to call in and talk. Call in and listen, call in and exchange views, and the call-in number again here is 427-3772. So let's begin with an interview or two from the streets. This is going back a little bit, but it has to do with a guy called Mr. TV, who I haven't seen on the Pacific Avenue Strip much recently, but he encountered some problems with police and apparently beat them back successfully, and this was my last interview with him.
Well, we're out on the street Saturday night about 15 to 9, and it's
Mr. TV is
set up here in front of the defunct Downtown Informant Center, previously the headquarters of the hosts. He's having a TV dinner. How's it going, Mr. TV?
8.7.
8.7. Well, it's your own rating of yourself. Hardly a fair judge, but how's the food?
It's good.
That's like a tasty salad. It is April 26th, I believe, and it's really a busy Saturday night. A lot of folks on the streets, and you have your stand set up here at a legal distance, more than 10 feet from a building, more than I think it's 14 feet from a crosswalk, or is it 10 feet? I don't know. But in any case, it's legally set up. You haven't had any problems with the police?
No. Nobody said anything to me for months.
Well, let's say a year ago, you were facing repeated harassment.
Right. And I had a press conference down there at the courthouse. And was covered by the TV stations and the newspaper, and then won the case.
In fact, every time you went to court, the other side failed to show up, right?
That is true. All three times, which I call a pattern of harassment.
And indeed, there was some interest by local civil rights attorney Kate Wells in taking your case, but she recently decided not to because...
She said she only takes federal cases. Does not want my case.
Well, I see that you're getting some contributions even as we speak.
Well, Mr. TV wanted to show me a short film strip that I didn't feel like I had any time because I was going to go see a long feature-length film and I was running late. So I thought I'd come back out and catch a show, but I see it's dinner break, so I'm just leaving a contribution for a great cause.
A loyal supporter. Thank you. What's your name, loyal supporter?
Tree.
By film strip, she meant, well, Mr. TV is a great one for visual puns. He would hold up a tiny exposed strip of film and call that a film strip and so forth. I was never bowled over by this kind of stuff, but a lot of people enjoyed it. He had a lot of good spirit, and he had a perfect right to be there, which concerned me when police went after him on three separate occasions. On all three occasions, the case was dropped in court, which led him to go seek legal counsel to try to get some kind of injunction to stop the police from doing that, and ultimately wasn't able to get that injunction. Let's hear a little more music, and then I'll be right back.
Thank you, Trey.
Says I gotta wear the suit, wear the woolen suit and the matching jacket. Mother says I gotta wear the tie, wear the clip-on tie, and I know she's right. Mother says I gotta take a lunch, take a healthy lunch, and she helps me pack it. Mother says we gotta kiss goodbye, and I know that's just polite. Mother says I gotta wear the coat, wear the stupid coat, and I think it's silly. Mother says I gotta wash my face, really wash my face, and it's not to just talk. Mother says I gotta take the gloves, take the birthday gloves, 'cause it might get chilly. Mother says I gotta bundle up if I want to take that walk. She says,
Doug, you know I love you. Doug, you know you're good. Doug, I know your way around this neighborhood. I'm only thinking of you. See how much you've grown. But Doug, you'll never go to town alone.
Mother says I gotta know my name, really know my name, both the first and last ones. Mother says I gotta know my street, know my stupid street, and the number two. Mother says I gotta stay on grass, keep my feet on grass, and she pulled a fast one. Mother says that I can go to town if I follow every rule. She says,
Doug, you know I love you.
But Doug, you'll never go to town alone.
that street at all. Don't talk.
I'll be watching.
Don't you talk to anybody that you meet.
Don't talk.
Don't talk until I call.
Mother says I gotta brush my teeth, really brush my teeth, and I just don't get it. Mother says I gotta take the stupid dog or a chaperone. Mother says I gotta be polite, really be polite, or I can just forget it. Mother says that I can go to town, but I think I'm staying home.
And that was another one from Uncle Banzai, and it was called Doug Goes to Town. There's going to be a lot of Doug on this hour, so be prepared to dig in for Doug. It's still free radio you're tuned to, 101.1 FM. In the studio, unexpectedly early, is that early bird off to dinner, and so we're going to let him poke his beak in here before he wanders off to peck at his food. Mike Rhodes from Fresno. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Robert. Thanks for having me.
He's looking very working class in his kind of cool cap and suntanned and big smile and a nice mustache. I wish you could see him here. Perhaps someday you will, once we reveal the location of our secret studio and invite the public to mob us. Anyway, Mike has been on the air before regularly talking about the Fresno scene. It's mostly about the homeless civil rights lawsuit, the Kincaid suit, as I call it, although there are a number of plaintiffs involved. And then also about the situation in Fresno around police misconduct, the attempt to get citizen oversight of police, anti-war activity in Fresno, cop watch activity in Fresno, and other kinds of activity in Fresno. And you're here. You are from Fresno. I guess you're visiting one of your children, or maybe your only child, goes to UCSC, right?
Simone. Yeah, she's up at Kresge. That's her first year. We have two daughters. Vanessa went to UCSC also, as did my wife, Pam. So we're sort of like a slug family.
Yeah, slugging it out, or coming back to visit the old slugstead. The reason I called you, of course, into the studio, particularly at this point, about a month ago we talked about the homeless task force, or whatever it was, the 10-year plan to babble about homelessness while doing very little, which you have had a lot of interchange on the Internet on this issue. Most people may not be aware of it if they're not tuned to your email list, Fresno Homeless Advocates. There's been a lot of discussion about this group that the city council has joined and I guess was set up under the federal auspices to allegedly apportion various parts of the federal pie. Mayor Autry, the mayor of Fresno, made a public confession that maybe he was wrong, that there should be housing for people even if they're not sober, and he had taken the wrong approach to homelessness. You've chronicled the whole story of how homeless people in their encampments at New Jack City under the freeway and in other places stood strong, particularly in the face of your successful federal lawsuit, which actually came down with an initial ruling almost 2 years ago, right?
That's right. Yeah, we got a preliminary injunction against the city of Fresno from taking and immediately destroying homeless people's property.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of deterred them from passing an anti-camping law like we have here in Santa Cruz, the sleeping ban.
Well, that remains to be seen.
But they haven't passed it yet.
They have not passed it yet, nor have they passed the ordinance that came out a couple of months ago, or proposed a couple of months ago, to ban people from asking for money from the Median Islands.
Which is, I think it's illegal in Santa Cruz to ask either to or from a vehicle for money. Although I continue to see people on the freeway entrances and exits, which is interesting, mainly, I guess, police. They're either more tolerant or they can only go after... They have gone after them, too, usually under a different ordinance.
Oh, well, people in Fresno, there's numerous groups that do this. One of them is called Kids Day, where they're raising money for community hospital or children's hospital. And they have hundreds of volunteers out on the median islands begging for money, going out into traffic, waving their
arms.
These
are sanctioned and respectable beggars.
They are. And in fact, the city council was so clear about this that they wanted to make a process by which legitimate groups could beg for money and homeless people couldn't.
The point I was making here, and we have a similar situation here, except that they don't try to dignify that process with any kind of legal differentiation. What we have in Santa Cruz is a law that bans, they claim it's time, place, and manner restrictions on soliciting for anything of value, whether it's money or food or an object. And they claim you can't do it after dark at any time, no matter who you are. Mm. You can't do it from a seated position. You can't do it unless you supply your own chair, although people are seen doing it all the time, and that part of the law is not enforced, but it's there. You can't do it within 15 or 14 feet of a building in a business district.
Robert, I think sometimes these people are just making it up as they go.
It was an elaborate set of laws put into place by Neil Coonerty's council. He's now our supervisor, and his son, Ryan Coonerty, who's now the mayor, has been supportive of these laws and, of course, introduced new ones regarding making it illegal to even sit in your vehicle. And they have the same problem that you have in Fresno, or at least that the council has in Fresno, to distinguish between the good and the bad. And what they do is they simply give the police a blank check to do that. And because they say, well, we'll make it constitutional by making it illegal for everybody, and therefore we're not discriminating.
But they selectively enforce the law.
Of course, of course.
That's exactly what they do. But I will say that we have had some success in stopping the police from some of the most egregious attacks on the homeless in Fresno. The city no longer bulldozes the encampments.
Because of the lawsuit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. What they do now is the city sanitation department comes in, they put notices up, and they don't touch anybody's tents, their personal property. They actually clean up the areas without destroying anybody's property. And they've been doing this for several months now, and it's a direct result of our aggressive legal pressure that we've been putting on them.
In fact, and somewhat similar to Ontario, California, where they actually set up tents and provided porta-potties and other facilities for homeless people until they began cutting back the Ontario tent city about 2 months ago. Cut it down by half, fenced it in, turned it into what some call a concentration camp. And actually, that's literally what it is. The original meaning of a concentration camp in the Boer War in South Africa was they took all the Boers and they concentrated them in these areas. Of course, it acquired a somewhat more negative connotation during World War II when the Fuhrer had his own concentration camps and the U.S. had its Japanese-American concentration camps. But I guess, the issue here is how you have successfully, tomorrow in court there's going to be a final resolution, as I understand it. It's not even going to trial. The city is surrendering in some sense, although I suppose you're settling for less than you might get.
We don't know.
You're not sure?
Well, it's a crapshoot when you go to trial. You have no way of knowing whether you're going to prevail or not. We could have lost. We could have won, but there could have been no judgment of monetary value found. The jurors could have said, well, yes, the city did do that, but the value of whatever they took was negligible.
But obviously the city had the feeling that you were going to win.
Yeah. And I'm not at liberty to say what that settlement is right now, but I will tell you
on Sunday this. You'll be calling in with all the details, right?
Yeah, we certainly will.
Because tomorrow in court that settlement comes out, right?
That's right. 10:15 tomorrow in federal court in Fresno. It goes before Judge Wanger, and he makes a determination of whether he's going to accept this or not, and there's absolutely no reason to believe he wouldn't. It's been hammered out between the attorneys for the homeless and the attorneys for the city. And
how much have the homeless had to do with the settlement themselves? First of all, how many plaintiffs were involved?
There's eight named plaintiffs. And these are people who have come forward and done a lot of the testifying. They have put their names out there. They've spoken publicly about this, and they represent the class. The class itself, this is a class action lawsuit, represents about 240 homeless people who have come forward. The next phase of what's going to happen, if this is approved, and we believe it will be, is that we'll put a notice out and see who else is out there who had their property taken, and so that number of 240 may increase. Now, there may be people in Santa Cruz now that lived in Fresno during these attacks for the last over the last 5 years. So if any of your listeners...
Extends back 5 years specifically.
Yeah, if any of your listeners had been in Fresno during that time and lost your property or know anybody who did, they should get in touch with us so that we can make you a part of the class action lawsuit.
Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will pass on your information to a mic here, or you can call them long distance, but probably the simplest way is to try get a local contact.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So how involved, you didn't really answer my question, how involved, Mr. Rhodes, were the homeless plaintiffs in the settlement? Did they have a veto power over it, or was it attorneys saying, oh, I'm going to get my juicy legal fees here? And indeed, that is probably the largest. What's the largest part of the settlement? The legal fees, or the punitive and/or compensatory damages of the? Well, I'm not to give me the exact detail.
Yeah, yeah,
what's
yeah.
the proposed?
Yeah.
If it's accepted, which is a bigger chunk, attorneys or
direct assistance to the homeless?
A compensation to the homeless, restitution.
Significantly larger amount, and I will say that the attorneys were not working for peanuts. They will be well compensated, too, but the homeless will be much better compensated than the attorneys.
The average cost of an attorney values his time for in this lawsuit is how much? $100, $200, $500 an hour?
I think it's $300 or $400 an hour now.
Wow. And we're talking how many attorneys were involved?
Oh, God. They had an army of attorneys, at least six that were working a significant amount of time.
Three different law firms?
Couple of years. Yeah, three different firms. The American Civil Liberties Union, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Liberties, and the Heller Ehrman Law Firm. And, they had to put in hundreds, probably thousands of hours on this.
So thousands of hours at $500 an
hour. Oh, well, we're trying to get to the actual number here.
Well, I'm just estimating. That's at least $500,000 if we're talking about, thousands of hours. And, I mean, that's what happens. Even here in Santa Cruz, we had a lawsuit with Kate Wells and just a couple of attorneys fighting in the Blue Lagoon case where the police surveilled and harassed this bar endlessly under a lieutenant, now Deputy Chief Patty Saponi. Huge amount of money, I think $500,000, $1 million. Unnecessary expenses, if I have that number right. I think I do. So,
well, let me answer your question.
Mm-hmm.
Your question was how.
How much did
what
they
was the role, and what was the role of the?
Did Al
the
Williams,
homeless?
For example, participate in this discussion?
Yeah, Al did. Al did. In fact, more than most of the named plaintiffs, he attended some of the depositions of city officials, which is kind of going into detail about the process that went into the city policy, and the named plaintiffs would meet regularly with the attorneys to talk about the case. They would bring people from outside in, from other homeless people in, to talk with them about their experiences. And when it came down to the settlement, the decision was really up to them. It was the eight named plaintiffs that gave a thumbs up or a thumbs down to this proposed settlement. And
were you also privy to these conversations, or were you excluded from these discussions?
I was in the middle of it because...
Hey, wait a minute. You're not a named plaintiff, or you're not an attorney. What's going on here?
I was a consultant.
A consultant?
They hired me.
And how much is your fee?
Me.
Now we get to it here.
Oh, no. You're going to embarrass me on the radio.
I'm going to want to cut of this, man. I mean, I've been publicized. In fact, you credited me with the inspiration for this lawsuit. Where's my cut, man?
Actually, you're absolutely right, Robert. You were the inspiration for this lawsuit.
We need a nest egg for our lawsuit.
Well, they were paying me a very modest hourly wage to do some of the organizing work to hold this together in Fresno, because there's a lot of logistics that went into making this happen, and you had to have somebody on the ground there. And I was just lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time. But when we were in talking to the city, The attorneys, our attorneys, wanted me to come in and be a part of those discussions. And the city saw me, and they just, for lack of a better word, freaked out. And they were like, they went to the judge, and they're, oh, he can't be in here. You know, they don't like, the city doesn't like me at all.
Well, you're not a plaintiff. You're not a lawyer. What the hell? You got a man with, you got a hat. So what? Come on.
So they kicked me out of the discussions. And
how early on?
Immediately.
So, well, I thought you said you were privy to the discussions. You were in the
middle.
Well,
yeah, but just between the attorneys for the city of Fresno and the attorneys for the homeless people, there was these discussions with the judge, sort of trying to see if they could come up with a settlement. And the truth be told, right now, it's not a done deal yet. So there's, I think it'll probably.
But if it isn't a done deal, you presumably it'll go to trial, right?
On Tuesday.
So the potential trial is coming up Tuesday, if it isn't a done deal.
It's still on the books to go to trial on Tuesday. But there's a meeting with the judge tomorrow, which will probably result in a settlement.
And you say this based on the opinion of the attorneys who've talked to you.
Yeah.
The city attorney didn't call you and say, please, please call off your dogs. There was no such phone call for you.
No, they would probably be sending the dogs on me.
Well, that happens later. When all the publicity is gone, when all the attorneys have gone home, then you get to meet the police, perhaps later.
Yeah, but I should go back to the origin of this, because I think that is an interesting story, because we were witnessing week after week, the city would come out and were bulldozing homeless encampments in Fresno, and I'd be talking by phone on this radio station, and I remember one day talking to Robert, and I think I handed the phone to Pam Kincaid, who's one of the lead plaintiffs. In fact, she was the lead plaintiff on the case, and she was talking about what was going on. When I got back with Robert on the phone, he says, well, why don't you do something about it? And I just thought, well, like what? Get a preliminary injunction or a temporary restraining order against them. This is blatantly illegal, what they're doing. And, you know, a little light went on, and I thought, well, you're absolutely right. That's, it's not enough just to report this and to continue to document it. Something has to be done. So I did. I talked to different attorneys, and it got to some people in the ACLU. It got to other attorneys, and they looked at it, and they said, well, can we come down and look at this, and can you introduce us to some of the people that are involved in this and show us what's going on? They were just amazed at the blatancy of what the city was doing to the homeless, violating their rights. And I was just listening to the press conference when this lawsuit was first announced, and what they were saying, this was in front of City Hall about 2 years ago, was that the city is in violation of the Constitution because everybody has constitutional rights of protection from being searched and having their property seized by government. And the city of Fresno was seizing people's property and immediately destroying it without giving them any due process.
And due process would be?
Well, look, think of it this way.
Notice that they're taking it, time to pick it up.
If the city,
they didn't charge them with criminal offenses, right?
Right. Now, what the city said was all this property was abandoned. Now, if the city finds your bike in front of a 7-Eleven and you're not around and maybe it's been stolen, they don't know, nobody claims it, what do? They don't come out there with a bulldozer, crush it, and put it in the back of a garbage truck and haul it away.
No, we simply crush homeless people and haul it. No, they don't do that yet.
Right. So they have a process for property that is abandoned or stolen, and they try to get it back to the owner.
I catch your point. Here in Santa Cruz, what the rangers do in the Poganip, which is the main place where homeless people sleep, 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people are estimated to be in the city area each night, all of them but 40 to 60 tonight without emergency walk-in shelter. They face a law that criminalizes them under the sleeping ban, and they say many of them set up camps, And the camps, some of them are not so well set up. Let's have some decent, well set up camps, folks. Pat Kittle and others, Hobo Lee, have suggested, I again remind you, all you homeless folks listening out there, that camping lightly and gently on the land as much as you can is really the important way to go. And it, you know, it also it influences public opinion, and it might influence public policy. Of course, my concern is that it's not really, you know, the African Americans can be as they can clean up as much as they can according to what, you know, Booker T. Washington suggests, and they're still going to get their asses kicked down the road because of prejudice. And the same thing is true with homeless people. But the issue here that for us in Santa Cruz is they post, you know, we're coming back in 3 days to pick up your stuff and destroy it. Come and pick it up. Now, that would not be legal under the injunction in Fresno that has been on for 2 years. But is it, you know, is it, I guess I wonder, is it the practice in other communities? And have you had any interaction with homeless people or attorneys in other communities? Because we obviously don't have such an injunction here in Santa Cruz. And you might turn my own words, you know, back to me and say, well, Robert, why don't you get a lawsuit together to do what you've done? And of course, we're trying to do that around the sleeping ban. But this other issue, which requires more documentation, you have to show property was taken.
Was the critical piece of evidence in mm-hmm. this that time and again convinced the judge to issue a preliminary injunction and to rule in favor of the homeless people to say that their rights were violated, which he did about a month ago. So that part of the case was over. Then if we went to trial, the only thing we would be looking at...
And there was a TRO in place for, what, a year and a half before
that? Yeah, and it still is. The only thing that was going to be discussed at trial, if we go to trial...
The amount of damages.
Is the amount of damages. What would be the compensation to the homeless people who had their property taken? That was the only issue that was going to be discussed at this trial. It was going to be a six-week trial. Now, the most important piece of evidence in that was the video work that my daughter did during the attacks with the bulldozers. She captured on film the city sanitation department coming in and clamping on to people's bicycles, their whole tents, and picking those up and putting them into the back of garbage trucks, and then that property being crushed. She even filmed one segment where a police officer was involved in a tug-of-war with a homeless person over property. This officer was trying to take a shopping cart away and have it crushed. Now, the judge saw that, and this, the property that was in the shopping cart was all neatly folded. We had the person whose property it was testify. She had all kinds of very valuable things there. It was indisputable that what the police were doing and the sanitation department was doing was taking and immediately destroying homeless people's property. If it was just the police's word against a homeless person's word, and we would have been in trouble.
People who want to see the photographic evidence can go to Indy Bay. You can Google for INDYBAY and then go to the Central Valley, Indy Bay. And you'll see, if you Google for Mike Rhodes, you'll see his stories dating back over the last 2 or 3 years, documenting both with still photography, video journalism, pictures scanned in documents, kind of killing you step by step and showing the community as well as the courts and the city officials just what was going on. We have done that to a much lesser extent. And, of course, that we didn't have, I know Simone is getting a pretty nasty, a couple $100,000 cut of the settlement, right?
In fact, I was thinking,
she like older men, by the way. We could possibly talk about this later. But, you know, it isn't determined. But, yeah, I mean, it sounds like you had, if you itemize a number of people you had actively working on this lawsuit, how many would you estimate were actually involved over this 3-year period?
Are you talking about the attorneys or the
both attorneys,
people
on the ground, people doing publicity work, man. people you know, gathering evidence?
Well, see, there's all kinds of levels of involvement that people have had, from simply being witnesses to helping organize events in support of homeless people. To the lawyers and the named plaintiffs, there's got to be 100 people that have been involved to some significant degree in this process over the last couple of
years. How difficult was it for you to get the three law firms that you mentioned, the ACLU and the What are the two other firms you mentioned?
Heller, Ehrman, ACLU, and the Lawyers Committee for Civil Liberties.
And now that they've won this case, will they come to Santa Cruz and help us out?
I'll tell you one thing. And you refer to the money a couple of times and the attorney's fees. From my understanding, Heller, Ehrman, which is a large law firm in the Bay Area, has put probably as much or more time as anybody, and they've just put enormous resources into this. They're going to donate their entire recovery in this lawsuit and give that to the ACLU and the Lawyers Committee so they can continue doing this kind of work.
I hope that it's earmarked specifically for homeless stuff, because the ACLU is notoriously, with the exception of the Jones lawsuit and this lawsuit, negligent, ignoring homeless rights on this issue. It's really hard to find. There's been a couple of lawsuits in Los Angeles around search and seizure in Skid Row. I guess from 2000 there was one. And then there was the Jones case. But they don't, and Santa Cruz, the ACLU, never gets involved in homeless cases ever that I've ever heard of. Well, actually, 13 years ago they filed a friend of the court brief.
You know what I think, Robert? I think if you were to get somebody to video some of the attacks, what's the ranger's name?
Chief Ranger John Wallace.
John Wallace.
Yes.
Okay, we had a Ray Wallace. He was
half-brothers, it could be.
Something. My thought is that if you can get somebody to video these attacks, from what I understand, it's ongoing, and they give some kind of notice. If they give 3 days notice, all you got to do is, you know, come when they say that they're going to be there.
But they don't say that when they're going to be there. What they do is Wallace and his cops and rangers go through. They post. They put up these these 3-day notice posters, and then sometime in the next week or two, they come by. And Wallace doesn't do it personally. He hires labor ready crews of poor people, you know, kind of, you know, immigrant labor, poor white labor, people who, you know, who get paid cheap labor.
Get somebody who works for labor ready. Give them a camera
and have them go around and pay them to do it. Yeah,
yeah, they get paid to
do it. Or else we can stalk around with them. You know, we should find out when they go out and just follow them around camera. And when the police try to stop us, we'll video the police trying to stop us.
I could almost guarantee you, you'll win in court because we have a precedent now. Assuming everything goes,
it's not a precedent in the sense that it's a different federal district, but it is a, you know, it's a nearby precedent.
You know, the thing that made this possible was the enormous resources that the attorneys put into it. They've done a lot of legal research, and those documents could be available to any attorney here that wanted to defend people's
rights. Maybe we can get you to act as a sort of a liaison with us on this issue, because
if the fee is right,
yeah,
I can help you.
Of course, I've got donuts, I have jelly beans, I've got peanut butter sandwiches I can offer you. And, of course, back issues of the Street Shit Sheet.
That's right.
The no longer published homeless newsletter that I used to write regularly many years ago. The warehouse is bulging with old issues. So what about here? That's our problem in Santa Cruz. We have two overworked attorneys. We had three. One of them gave up. We had a law firm back east that decided it didn't want to be involved. And so we have it's a slow process if it's happening at all. And it's one where we need more legal resources and more backing to deal with the issue, which actually in a certain sense is simpler. The sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, the sleeping ban, the law that criminalizes homeless people at night, 11 to 8:30 in the morning, thou shalt not sleep on any public property.
Yeah, see, we don't have that in Fresno.
Right, but you have. I mean, and so it's harder. I mean, you have to document, and you have documented destruction of property, but it's actually easier to demonstrate that there are shelters, and that's what they did in Los Angeles in the Jones case, and they won. But they won a settlement that destroyed the precedent, so there's no longer a precedent over 9 states. But there is, the arguments can still be used,
right,
that it's cruel and unusual punishment, maybe violates due process, right to travel, all kinds of other things. If you are arresting people for sleeping and they have no legal place to go, generally speaking, you don't even have to prove specifically that there's no legal place for that person that night. You just have to show that, generally speaking, they're sheltered for a fraction of the people who need it, and therefore, you know, it's essentially a violation of a basic substantive due process right under the 14th Amendment. The right, you need to sleep in order to live. You have to sleep somewhere on public property if you have no place to go, and you just can't be arrested for doing it or harassed or penalized. And the problems we run into have been numerous. aside from the usual problem, which is one of the reasons I'm talking to you about this, of organizing homeless people, and that you apparently and Al and Pam and others have kind of taken the lead. Pam is now dead, of course. She died in suspicious circumstances, which you also document on the Indie Bay Central Valley if people want to check it out. But the real problem is we've actually got homeless plaintiffs, but it's the legal muscle that is really needed here.
Well, we couldn't have done it with the legal folks that we have in town. They're just overwhelmed and underfunded, usually working in small law firms. That's why coming to the Bay Area and getting a large...
Did you go out? Did you do outreach yourself, or did somebody contact you? How did that happen?
I believe it was Mark Schlossberg.
Schlossberg,
mm-hmm. Up in San Francisco. I had been in touch with him around some police accountability issues. And I said, Mark, could you look at this and tell me what you think? And he passed it on to Michael Risher, who also works in San Francisco ACLU, who sort of specializes on this issue. He's particularly good at it now.
Which issue is that?
On homeless issues. Uh-huh. And
I haven't heard of much happening in San Francisco, for example.
I'm totally unaware of what they do outside of our area.
Maybe San Francisco needs to send to New York for attorneys or something.
I know.
You got to go out of the area to get some action.
Is the homeless people themselves? They're like these people. This is like the dream team. They've come from who knows where, and they've made an enormous difference in the community. Mm-hmm. Now, you also talked about the group that's working on developing a housing first model that's been set up by the city, and you ask how that was going too.
I call them what a
it's a task force.
A hoax full of hacks who are trying to divvy up the tiny amount of funds that are being provided by the Bush regime and before it by the Carter regime. Instead of dealing with basic housing and employment issues, they're characterizing the homeless as skunks, punks, and drunks, or as you might put it, dual diagnosis, hardcore, disabled, I guess, is the crazy people who can't take care of themselves, best to perhaps make the incarceration commitment laws harsher so you can get these folks off the street. I don't know if the homeless 10-year task force is talking about this. This is being talked about in other contexts. They're trying to, Laura's Law in statewide, mm-hmm, is an attempt to weaken protections that aren't particularly strong for people who are threatened with 72-hour holds and 14-day holds under the, 5150s and 5250s in the California State Welfare Code.
Well, what this group is about, and this group has been formed in a direct response to our focus on the policies of the city of Fresno towards the homeless, putting a national spotlight on them and embarrassing them for their policies.
Embarrassing who? The
city of Fresno.
I know that the city of Fresno was very well embarrassed by your lawsuit.
Yeah.
And by you brought the homeless marathon
the national
to town with Jeremy
marathon.
Alderson.
Yeah.
And then. Autry, the mayor, aside from holding his very touching prayer sessions, felt he had to back off on this. He made some promises he didn't keep, and then he went to the usual poverty pimps in Fresno, the Poverello House and the Mission, that are providing. It's probably a little more than token, but it's heavily restricted services that essentially eat up all the homeless funding. Is that accurate or not?
Well, the city budgeted in response to the criticism they received. They budgeted about $5 million for homelessness in the current fiscal year.
Compared with last year or the year before?
Well, the year before that, it was probably a couple of million dollars. But the devil's in the details. It's what are they doing with that money that really matters. And there's a woman's shelter, sort of for battered women, not exclusively homeless people, but mm-hmm, they do good work. And so it does provide some space for women to get away from abusive relationships. And I think the city allocated them $100,000 over the last couple years. They've done that year after year. And then there's emergency service grants, which is several million dollars, and that probably largely goes to like the Poverello House and the Rescue Mission organizations.
But in terms
like
of
that.
Basic shelter needs, these the money that's appropriated in the poverty pimp organizations that use it are supplying only a fraction of the need, right? And they're also
less than a fraction.
And the amount of resource that actually meet and reaches the homeless people, even of the small amount of money that's spent, a lot of it is siphoned off in salaries, administration, and so forth. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's what we found, that there's just millions. There's actually millions of dollars coming in through different funding sources, like through HUD, through CDBG money, Community Development Block Grant money. And the city has, in their own general fund, they've allocated money. They allocated $3 million for property, for purchasing property, which would be converted for housing for homeless people. So it was this huge jump, which made everybody look at that and say, oh, well, the city's finally getting serious about addressing the homelessness issue. The question I finally asked like a week or two ago, and I kind of hit myself for not asking it sooner, was, well, okay, that's what you allocated. How much have you actually used? Well, they didn't use a single dollar of the money for the purchasing of any property or redevelopment of...
They're saving it for a rainy day.
No, they passed it on to the next year's budget so that they look like they're... And they probably...
It's a budget surplus. So they can spend it on the police force next year.
Police.
Yeah, you got to control them homeless while you're thinking about this whole thing.
Our police budget is over 50% of the city budget.
Same here.
Budget.
Police and Parks and Rec are over 50% here.
This is just police... alone.
Sounds like we have a caller.
Maybe we should take it.
Maybe we should. I think it's a good idea. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Mike Rhodes from Fresno and me. How are you?
Is this Robert?
Yeah, it is.
Hi, this is Crazy Mary.
Hey, Crazy Mary. You're the woman who was arrested by Officer, what's his name, at the drum circle for...
Oh, what? Officer Klein, yes.
Officer Klein, yes. I remember that. We talked about that back in February, but what's the word?
He arrested me yesterday again.
He did?
Yes.
He likes you.
Yeah, they love me, don't they?
Where did he arrest you and why?
I was at San Lorenzo Park. I was drunk in public, and I don't know. Anyway,
Were you so drunk you couldn't take care of yourself?
No.
Were you so drunk you were abusively vomiting on people nearby and alarming the horses?
No.
Could you walk a straight line?
Yes.
Who came up to you to arrest you, and what time of day was it?
You want me to read the ticket?
Yeah, or tell me from your own recollection, whatever.
Okay, it was about 2:30 or 3. And I was detained for 5 hours. I got out, and you might want to edit this, but if you don't, I'm incriminating myself.
Well,
don't
incriminate you. Hold it. Don't incriminate yourself unless you want to. You're welcome to.
I don't care. I'm like...
Oh, okay, you're live.
Today I'm really pissed.
Go ahead.
Okay. I got out of they let me out about 7:45 or whatever, and I was like, oh, where's my bike, and blah, blah, and so I walked around the corner. I had to go to the bathroom, so I was walking around as I had to go to the bathroom, and I went around. I was getting ready to go to the Santa Cruz Diner, right? And I walked behind the probation, you know, where the probation department is, off of Water, in the parking lot. I found a rolled-up dollar bill with a bundle in it. And guess what?
What?
I've been high all fucking day.
My goodness. Well.
Well, I shared it with three people.
What news?
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
Aside from your drug use, which frankly is your own business, as far as I'm concerned.
Who gives a fuck, right? At this point today, which is yesterday I got arrested. I got out and I did the crank and I've been spun since yesterday.
Well, let me ask you this, Mary, because I know Hawk was going to talk to us about...
Yeah, he's out fishing. We're at the wharf right now. And so, I'm really pissed off.
Right.
And so I got some issues, and I'm really fucking pissed off.
Right. Well, anything more you want to say? We're talking about the Fresno lawsuit, which has been successful, and where homeless people are winning, going to win millions of dollars, we hope, tomorrow morning in court.
That's
so.
Not even the issue with me. I need Bob's address or his phone number because I accidentally lost it.
Oh, you're looking for a human rights organization activist?
Yes.
Yeah, I can give that to you, and also anyone else listening who has a sleeping band ticket or a concern with the
yes,
police.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
All right,
I got another camping ticket.
How'd that come up?
seven cops, 7 a.m. in the morning, at gunpoint, putting us in handcuffs, taking our pictures, harassing us, threatening us, blah, blah. It's ongoing, Robert, and I'm really pissed off.
Where was this?
Where I was camping 2 weeks ago.
And
I'm part of Pack Your Trash, and they looked at my camp, and they said, oh, this is a mess. I said, well, go 100 yards the other way and look at that camp, all right? You know what? I'm like, sick of this shit. And I just got three tickets today, two for open container, because they're harassing me. They're following me, Officer Wayman and Romero just fucking gave me two tickets, and Ranger Wallace in the park this morning, and Ranger Wallace fucking told me that I couldn't park. I poured my beer up before they drove up on the wrong side of the street. I'm sitting on the curb at San Lorenzo Park, okay? Oh, I'm so pissed, Robert. I could fucking have a... I'm having a cow. Sorry.
No, I don't... Okay. Keep the facts coming there, Mary.
I'm pissed. I'm sorry, okay?
Pissed and spun, we might add.
Yeah, a little fucking tired and pissed off and spun.
Well,
fuck,
you know,
who cares? I'm fucking pissed.
So
I'm a merry prankster. I'm old school. I've been here 30 years. Blah, blah. Fuck, who cares? Anyway, no, Ranger Dickhead said to me, he goes, oh, is that your bike? Because I had it parked by the phone booth off of Dakota Street against the yellow fire hydrant. He goes, he issued me a ticket for no bike license. And then he proceeds to tell me that if he catches me in San Lorenzo Park or Grassy Park drunk or drinking, that he will issue me a restraining order for my life. And you know what? That's against my civil liberties. I live here. Okay? That's what I'm saying. Fuck this.
Yeah, I don't know what the details are about. I guess...
Because I'm a chronic alcoholic.
Well, I don't know what the rights are of chronic alcoholics.
I don't do needles. I might do crank or whatever. Once in a great occasion, big fucking whoopee. I smoke pot.
Right.
Well, the cops steal my pot, my potsies. You know what? I'm so sick of this, Robert. I could fucking have a cow.
Well, you know,
but anyway, it's a nice day on the wharf.
Yeah, it is a nice day. But, you know, Mary, come to the... Mary, I invite you to come. First of all, call Bob Patton and talk to him. Let me give you that number again.
Yeah, I lost it.
Are you ready? You got a pencil?
Yes, I do.
It's 345-9685.
What's his last name?
345... Patton, like General Patton, you know. 345-9685.
All right, and not only did Ranger Dickhead insult me because I told him I was working, I was trying to improve my life because I was election officer Tuesday. Yeah, I worked at Harvey West Clubhouse for the election, 14 hours.
So we can blame you for the election results, eh?
I didn't tamper with them.
You probably should have.
I'm not an inspector, I'm a clerk.
Right, well...
Anyway, no, I didn't, and, you know, I'm not...
And you were
I'm not doing a felony, okay?
And you were sufficiently sober and...
Yes, I was totally sober. I got up at 5 and went to bed at... we got off at about 9:30, 10, and, yeah.
Well, obviously,
But
you know,
the precinct, there was two precincts at the place I was at. But the Harvey West Clubhouse, let's see, it was 5102... Or 5101, excuse me, 300 of the registered voters there are from Coral Street. Which
300
I am,
homeless voters.
Yes, I am one of those, and I voted Tuesday.
Good for you. Well, listen, Mary, I've got a guest from Fresno who's eager to get back to his middle-class family who has a roof over their heads tonight, unlike you, you pathetic creature.
And I stink. So what? I took a shower with cold water at the shelter.
Took a shower at the shelter? How could you?
Well, it was fucking lukewarm water, and I'm like, yeah, I'm really having a nice day.
You know, I want to talk to you more about this stuff. Can you call back, like, in about half an hour?
I was going to come over yesterday, but I was so tired I didn't make it.
Well, yesterday, yeah, come on Saturday to the Human Rights Organization meeting. It's 2 o'clock. It's at the Firefly Cafe at 131 Front Street. You know where that is?
No.
You know where Saturn Cafe is?
Yes.
It's a block from the Saturn Cafe on Front Street toward the wharf. And again, it's called the Firefly Cafe.
What's the cross street?
You know, it's just one block and a half up from the Saturn toward the wharf. And it's
133 front.
131 front.
131. Oh, that's right by where my son lives.
Yeah, it's right across from the, you know, the board and care home, whatever the heck it is, halfway house. It's again,
okay, I'll bring my son and he can talk to you too.
Sounds good. 2 o'clock, Human Rights Organization.
On Saturday.
Right.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye.
And tell the cops they could kiss my white honky ass.
You can tell them that yourself.
I do, but they won't arrest me.
Oh, well, there
I
you
got
are.
3 tickets today. Lovely, isn't that happy?
I remember.
Happy day, huh? I'm going to go get another ticket.
Talk to us. Keep those tickets. Keep documenting it, and we'll talk to you on Saturday.
Okay.
Thanks, Mary.
All right, love you.
Take care, babe. Yes, Mary from the street. Being candid about her situation, and quite articulate, even though she says she's spun and she was arrested for being drunk. She sounds pretty articulate to me for somebody in both those conditions. What do you think, Mike? Are we dealing with a lunatic here?
I was just thinking this is sort of a wonderful way of communicating everybody. It just people can call up, tell you what's going on, and it's just like
twice a week.
Then everybody knows what's happening. It's
if they have a radio.
Now, see, we don't have something like this in Fresno.
It used to be free radio Fresno.
There was, but we don't have a pirate radio.
Get
station
it together.
Now.
I think your wife Pam said she was interested.
She is. She's an old radio junkie. She would
not
love
hard to do.
To
you take one tiny fragment of that settlement for the homeless stuff and turn it into a homeless radio station.
Well, right? It's really theirs for whatever they want to do with it,
or whatever the attorneys want to donate it to.
Well, they could. They're welcome to make.
Or
any
you, Mr. Tireless Worker, who spent many hours at the, what is it, 500 an hour for you, or 250, let's be more reasonable. With all your hours, you can donate it for the radio station.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I am concerned, I'm jumping back, Mike here is, we're talking with Mike Rhodes, who's a Fresno homeless advocate, who's tireless. Go on IndyBay.org, Google for IndyBay, IndyBay, and read his stuff. He's very articulate, it's very well put together, he's been a journalist for, I don't know how long you've been a journalist. But, you know, you do, and I haven't read critics of you, so maybe you do a shitty job, and I don't even know about it. But, you know, from what I read, you do a great job. And it's certainly interesting the way you put it, and you're successful. You're successful at getting attorneys to help. You're successful at documenting what went down. And you're also hopefully going to be successful at getting us in touch with the attorneys we need to get a successful lawsuit going here, bolstering our own legal position here, or whatever we decide to do.
Well, you've got all the elements. I mean, there's clear abuse, documented, and
again, we're not thinking so much of using the. I mean, what you've done is good. What we've done already is we're working on the issue of getting rid of laws that make it illegal to sleep at night, which is another kind of avenue into this, mm-hmm. another aspect. Mm-hmm. And that, in a way, as I said before, should be easier because everyone has to sleep.
Right.
And, you know, you don't have to document it with cameras. You just have to have the evidence of the citations. Here's the citations for, you know, the arrests for sleeping. And where's the place where people can go to sleep? They don't exist.
Right.
So if we can, we're trying to put together kind of a resume of our case. Maybe we can give it to you, or you can put us in touch with the attorneys. We have a lot of trouble getting attorneys from different cities to call us back. And maybe we can, you know, get you to front for us. And maybe my reputation is so bad that nobody wants to call back. Other people have tried, too. I don't know what it is. I mean, I know that in Sacramento they're pursuing a lawsuit similar to yours. Another class action suit. Mark Murren is doing
that. Very
similar
things happen in Sacramento and Modesto and Stockton and lots of cities.
Are those cities doing anything, or just Sacramento?
Just Sacramento has a.
And they haven't got a lot of out of town attorneys helping. They just got Mark Murren and his partner who are helping. Just two attorneys. Of course, he's very skilled in class action lawsuits. He's won them before. But
one of the things that I look at with this, Robert, is that the legal tool is just one of
just
the tools
of
that
many.
We use.
Yeah, sure.
And if it wasn't for a whole lot of other things that we were doing, that wouldn't have worked.
Right. You need to be documenting it. You need to have homeless connections. You need to have homeless people willing to stand up and talk about it.
That's
right.
And
they're plays stupid enough and arrogant enough to go and do the kind of destructive work they were doing.
Right. There's all kinds of things that need to be done in conjunction with this. And also, part of what we did was behind the scenes political lobbying with city council members and getting them to move in a new direction. And
now, wait a minute. Now, what new direction has the city council moved in? I keep hearing this from you, and I'm always very skeptical. What new direction are they moving in?
Well, the first...
One porta potty that gets 24-hour guards at the new Jack City is all I've heard that they've really given... Oh, I'm sorry. The dog pens at the Pavarello house. So those are the two accomplishments.
No, they built tool sheds.
Tool sheds, I'm sorry.
For people.
Tool sheds.
About 100 tool sheds.
Turning people
now
into rakes and hoes. Very interesting.
Now, if you were to put your sister-in-law in such a contraption, they would probably have you arrested for some zoning violation. But no, the city, yeah, they put up.
So
that was one of the ways they spent like $350,000.
So these are the tangible accomplishments.
No, I'm just going. See, if you get me going on about all the bad stuff, Robert,
well,
I'll never
about,
stop.
Tell me about the good
the
things.
Good
the city
stuff that the city is doing. Okay, well, look, all I can say about the good stuff that the city of Fresno is doing is that, one, they've stopped the really bad stuff.
Under court order.
Yeah. Yeah, well, hey,
that's not, they're not being nice.
This is like a battleship going down in the ocean, and we're trying to turn it around.
But it didn't happen through lobbying. It happened because the court told them not to.
Well, it was actually more than that, Robert. It was public pressure. There was, sleep-ins at City Hall. There were... like you mentioned, the National Homelessness Marathon, that we actually got the mayor and city council members and board of supervisors members to come and sort of hold a town hall meeting on live national radio about the policy.
I remember. I was there.
You were there.
In fact,
was
I
fun.
Insulted the mayor personally.
Yes, you did.
Yes.
Repeatedly.
Yes. And I hope he took it to heart, actually.
Right. No.
I doubt it.
The city council members to this day talk to me about that night. They point to that and say that was a turning point that they really started
was
taking this seriously.
How was it a turning point, though? That's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
You say that.
Yeah. Okay,
remember,
well,
you can be seduced by the illusion of contacts with power. They're listening to you now.
Oh,
blah,
yeah.
Blah, all
yeah,
that crap.
I just get sucked right into that.
Right.
That's why they love me so much, Robert. No, okay. So specifically what they've done hasn't been a whole lot. You know, the portable toilets, the
toilet.
Trash bins.
Wasn't it a toilet, or were there more than one?
There's actually three. There's like
three toilets for how many people?
Oh, there's thousands.
Well, that I guess they share it. Well, everybody gets a 10-second piss. Is that the idea?
Well, it's whatever.
Ontario,
it's
Canada, which is a city a fraction of Fresno's size, gives I would say 10 or 20 times the amount of resources to the people in its homeless encampment for the last year. I just want to clarify.
Look, I don't know if this is going to go anywhere, and I'm going to keep the pressure on.
Forgive me
that
for battering you with this.
That's fine. Water off of a duck's back.
But I don't see any. I don't see significant change. And you do, and that's why I keep asking you.
Let me give me a minute here to explain why I have some hope. Now, I'm pretty cynical about these things generally, but what I can see is happening is that they're looking at bringing resources in to the community to establish a housing first model. One of the things that the mayor said is that the old model didn't work.
I remember.
And what we've got to do is to go to a housing first program.
Maybe this
that
is the mayor calling.
You want to take that phone?
Can we?
Yeah, sure.
Hi. I think you're on free radio. Are you still there?
Yes.
Is this a question for Mike?
Am I on the radio right now?
You are.
Oh, I wanted to say something about the evils of the mental health system, Robert.
I want to hear about that, Lila. You should call me back in about 20 minutes because our guest has got to go and he's kind of summing up for us. Can you call me back?
Yes, I will.
Please do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
So the housing first model is what you were talking about.
Is that the city elected officials are acknowledging that the current system is an utter failure.
I remember that
publicly. They said this publicly.
The mayor did. I played that on the radio, actually.
Thank you. They have appointed a task force to look into how to move beyond the situation we have now to bring the resources in to provide housing for all the homeless people that are on the street. That is their stated goal.
Are you taking this seriously, though? I mean, what they're doing? I mean, I'm wondering, are you really taking this seriously?
I'm taking seriously that is what they're saying is their stated goal. That they're saying, and we've got the mayor on record saying, that the current policy is a failure. What we want to do is we want to provide secure, decent housing for homeless people. What we want to do, and what I've talked to the task force members, what their commitment is to figure out a plan to get from here to there.
Question. One, what power does the task force have? Two, how many of the people on it are homeless or actual homeless advocates, and how big is it?
There's two people that are actually homeless. There's probably five people that I would generally classify as advocates. There's about 32 or 33 people on the task force, of which probably 15 people come at any given meeting.
A lot of merchants, a lot of conservative residents.
Oh, yes. There's all kinds of
problems.
What
power does the task force have? Is it simply an advisory group?
It is an advisory group, but what they've been directed to do is to, at the end of, I think it's 90 days, to deliver a plan that the city and the county will use to move in the direction of this housing first
model.
When
did the city get the money that they could be using now but aren't, as you pointed out a few minutes ago?
Oh, they've had it.
For how long?
Well, this last budget year, which ends, I think, in July, so
they've had it for the last year.
Oh, they've had the money there.
So they just don't know what to do with it. They had to get a task force together to talk about it. Right. I see. Okay, so you're hopeful, though, that this is going to result in something more meaningful.
What I'm saying is
I've seen this happen time and time again in city after city. Santa Cruz on two or three occasions recently in Arcata. Mm-hmm. It's bullshit. I mean, it is an attempt to avoid the issue usually. I mean, I'm trying to think of any homeless task force that actually resulted in meaningful housing or changes.
Okay,
in policy.
Robert,
I'm having trouble remembering.
On the other hand, you know, it's hard to imagine that we would have gotten to where we are at this point in Fresno, that we've stopped them from bulldozing. We're on the verge of a settlement, which is great. Be a huge benefit to the homeless population in Fresno. In fact, this settlement will probably result in hundreds of people being able to get off the streets.
Right.
That's no small
or
task.
Or else lots of bindles, one of the two.
Lots of what?
Bindles.
What's a bindle?
A bindle is a bit of, I think it's meth or,
or
heroin. You know.
See, you know more about that stuff than
I
do.
Well, I
know. Well, look, I don't know where this task force is going to go. I don't know if the city is sincere. I know that I've talked to a number of city council members that I think sincerely want to move in that direction. What they need is resources to and some direction on how to do it. What they say they want this task force to come out with is a plan of how to move in that direction.
They have the resources, and I don't. It seems to me that homeless advocates, your group, has been working rather tirelessly to put together suggestions and proposals, and has direct connections with national. You got National Coalition for the Homeless, National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty. All kinds of groups have all kinds of proposals. Mm-hmm. You don't need the Fresno group to come in with that. What I'm saying is, if these council members are interested, you go up with your own proposal and say, here, put this forward. Don't sit around waiting for 35 conservative business people to agree with us. You have got to take the initiative or else, and frankly, I think that's going to be a hard row for you to hoe because I think their ears are attuned to those other voices. You know, that's the problem. Mike Rhodes is in the studio. He's got to leave. If you got any questions for him, you have 5 minutes or less to call in. He may leave before the 5 minutes is up. He's already spent an hour with us. 427-3772 is the phone number if you've got a question for Mike, who drove in from Fresno today and is probably going to drive back. The man likes to drive. Where do you get the money for the gas, Mike? What's going on here? Have you been ripping off the homeless to do that? What's this right?
No, but I want to go back to the motivation of the city to resolve this issue, because you've been to downtown Fresno. You know what it looks like.
A lot of police in downtown Fresno.
A lot of police, a lot of homeless people. After 5 o'clock, when all the government workers leave, it's sort of deserted. there are developers that have a financial interest in developing downtown Fresno. There's one of them on the task force. It's Forest City Enterprises. Mm-hmm. They develop downtowns all over the United States. And for that reason alone, that is a motivator for the city of Fresno to resolve the homelessness problem in the community. So I think even aside from doing the right thing, I think that they want to move in this direction because they want to develop downtown, and in order to develop downtown,
they got to move the homeless.
They have
else.
To deal with some resolution to this. And the thing that they've fixated on is housing first. And I'm sure you've talked about this before. It's a plan that has been carried out.
Housing before you try to throw all the other services into place. You know, people need to get off the streets, even if they're still drinking, even if they're still using. They need to get off the streets.
There's no preconditions for getting decent, affordable
right.
housing.
I've heard a lot of talk about this, but it actually has not been significantly implemented in many cities, or even in the cities where they claim to have done something. Not much has been done.
Well,
so that's what I've noticed. Again, and I'm not an expert, so that's
right.
just my
critical view. I'm not an expert either, but they've mm-hmm. had several of people from Washington come out and talk to them about how you're already spending, and they're talking to the city officials, you're already spending tens, if not $100,000 per year for every homeless person.
You don't have
that's
to convince me, because you and I agree on that. My question is this a line that's being used to draw people
we'll
like you?
We'll find out. And I'll come back and we'll talk about it some more later.
Indeed, on Sunday, in fact, you'll be coming back to give us the details on the lawsuit.
Al's going to call you in. If you want me to call, too, I can do that.
More the merrier, as far as I'm concerned. It looks like nobody is calling in tonight. Like, I think we've got them all dazed, shocked, and awed with our discussion. It is a major victory, Mike, which I blame you for, primarily.
Well, you got to take some of the blame, too.
I gratefully take a little of the blame for my babbling on the radio about it. But you went out there in the field and took picture after picture, organized them into media coverage, again, on IndieBay for people who want to see it, IndieBay.org. You can see Mike Rhodes' work. And you can see his work probably if you go down to Fresno. You will find that, maybe you'll find there are actually less homeless people on the streets and more homeless, I don't know if there's probably not going to be the money to build the housing or the will to build the housing from this settlement. But it may put the brakes on the police for the last couple years to some extent, although apparently not enough to save poor Pam Kincaid.
Well, the police are a force unto themselves. They're a gang with guns, and they've got a culture that isn't going to be changed overnight either. That's another struggle that many people are engaged
but
in.
But remember, we have Obama to lead us forward.
Oh, that'll solve it all.
Yes, indeed. Actually, you're just one of those perfidious greens who's going to spoil everything and elect McCain, aren't you, you dog?
What, do I look green or something?
You have a green cap on.
I actually am a Green Party member.
Of course you are, you scoundrel. Of course, the Greens spend their time arguing, bickering, and babbling about rules statewide that drives me batty anyway. And in Santa Cruz, they support right-wingers for, people who claim to be green. They get into power and they criminalize homeless people. So it's really a sad situation. Though I have to admit, the Green Party mayor of Richmond was one of the people who helped put through the only law in California that I know of that explicitly has a condition you can't arrest a homeless person unless there's a shelter space, which is very,
Well, that's where
a
we
nice
want to
departure,
be.
Although I don't know about the whole idea of a shelter space being equivalent to a living space. A shelter space is more like, a doghouse.
Well, I want decent, affordable housing for everybody with no preconditions, and that's our goal. That's what we're struggling for, and I see this settlement, if it happens tomorrow, and we expect it to be just the beginning of that struggle. This is ending one chapter and beginning another.
Did you bring any street spirits with you, the homeless newspaper, which your articles have been appearing?
We've sold them all in Fresno. I don't have a copy left.
Well, this is June. You don't have the new June issue?
Oh, I haven't seen it. Have you?
I haven't either, no.
Yeah.
I keep hoping it'll show up. But
it should be here any day now.
It could. And for those who are interested in street spirit, give a call to Huff, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Or come to the Huff meeting every Wednesday. That's at 9:30 in the morning until 11:30 in the morning at the American Cafe, which is the fancy way of saying the cafeteria in the basement of the county building. Mm-hmm. Human Rights Organization, which I mentioned before, also has it at 2 o'clock to 3 or 3:30 at 131 Front Street at the Firefly Cafe on Saturday, 2 o'clock on Saturday. Mike, you want to sum up, or you want to say something else, or you had no money to get out of the studio while there's an opportunity to hit the road? Or
well, I really appreciate you giving me an opportunity to talk. I love being...
I've been interrupting you repeatedly. What do you mean, give you an opportunity? I know give you any opportunity.
This is the first time I've actually been on the air from the studio here. We've talked on the phone numerous times, but
I thought you were on the studio last time.
No, I think
time.
We came in and looked
I think you
around.
Looked around. Yeah, you didn't
yeah,
stay.
But we didn't get to actually be here and talk. I wish we had this in Fresno because it's like you have
it's not that
ample
hard.
Time to get into issues and chat with people, take phone calls, and hear what's going on
the street. If anybody bothers to call in, listeners.
It's great. It's been nice being here. Appreciate the opportunity. And I guess we'll talk to you on Sunday. What time?
10 o'clock would be good if you're up for it. Or, you know, we actually, the Sunday show lasts from about 9:30 to 1. So any time in there is possible.
Al and possibly I will both call in.
That would be great. And, of course, we'll be waiting your fat check in the mail from the settlement. Plus, if you want to help us with attorneys, we love to get – we'll try to send – maybe we can send you the resume, the summary of the case, and you can – I think we need to do more than just forward it to attorneys. We need to actually have some hands-on – gee, I really wish you'd pay some attention to these poor Santa Cruz characters who are looking to get more legal support. You know?
Well, we need more legal resources all over.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
for sure.
We have police brutality cases that go unaddressed because we don't have legal counsel. Local attorneys are overwhelmed and don't have the resources to address them all. So it's not something that's unique to Santa Cruz, not having enough legal resources.
No, but Fresno apparently was able to get those resources.
We were just incredibly fortunate.
Through people like yourself, and thank you, Mike, for doing that.
Well, you know, I was talking to Paul Alexander, who's one of the attorneys in this, just yesterday about this, and he was sort of saying the same thing. You know, well, I don't think we could have done this without you. And my feeling was just, you know, it's just such a honor to be a part of history. And I consider this to be a significant part of history in Fresno, that we've been able to stop an injustice like this and help homeless people get compensated for the losses they've suffered. So it's my honor.
And it's really hard to get compensation when your father's ashes or your grandfather's picture or other heirlooms are lost, because methodically there's destruction of these things. But yeah, this is something.
This will be a big victory for homeless people all over the country. When this is announced tomorrow, it will make other communities who are engaged in similar attacks on the homeless
attention,
think twice
John
about
Wallace.
It.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Always a pleasure, man. So we're letting him escape from the studio. You had your chance to call in, listeners. Too bad. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of the show, for those who don't remember, is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, because on the very rare occasion that sleeping ban demonstrations occur these days, where we try to fight the law that criminalizes poor people outside simply because they're sleeping, I've been known to wear a bathrobe, hence the name of the show, which actually began back in the days when there were more frequent protests of this kind, and I would often show up sporting a bathrobe more frequently. Anyway, you can call in if you have any questions, comments, derogatory remarks, praise, you name it. 427-3772 is the call-in number.
The mother of her bride was feeling too depressed to drink. She wondered when the honeymoon would end. She stood there in the corner and she watched her daughter shrink into her little wonderland of friends. And as she felt less queenly, she glowered rather meanly and counted all the money they would spend. The mother of the bride was feeling paranoid and old. Her husband knew she wouldn't want to dance. She knew she was expected to relinquish her control and hand it to a boy in rented pants.
mother of the bride was feeling purposely ignored. She hated when the other parents laughed. And even though the wine was not the best they could afford, she asked the waiter for a new carafe. And as she sat there reeling and slowly lost all feeling, she drunkenly complained about the draft. She offered up a bridal toast in perfect monotone and said that it was all a big mistake. But when she looked behind her, the bridegroom would remind her he had about as much as he could take. Duck, 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 it's a little tired.
And that was another one from the Doug album, and that one was called Doug Gets Married. More on Doug probably before we leave, but there's only about half an hour left in the show. So if you want to say your piece, you should call in soon. 427-3772 is the number to call here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I recommend you call. I'm looking now to see what's happening up in Portland. Because I think it's apropos to consider what's going on up there. Another way of fighting when you don't have the lawyers is to fight with numbers. And the Portland homeless activists up there have been sleeping out in front of City Hall. And then more recently, when they were kind of washed away, they moved across the street and then they came back. A lot of this is chronicled on Portland Indie Media. For those who want to check out the indie media up there, which has got some interesting stories on it and some interesting videos. And there's actually a whole homelessness section up there. And I'm looking over the indie media section now to see if anything new is cooking up in Portland land. That's Portland, Oregon. Doesn't look like there's a lot that's immediately new. There's a lot of speech to Mayor Potter and the City Council June 4th. Here's an interesting speech. This is a speech by Wesley Flowers, who maybe I can actually find a... I guess it's not... We can't hear his voice directly, but what he said was, according to this text... This is the text of a speech I delivered at the June 4th, 2008 City Council meeting. Everyone who spoke today was moving, and I will provide the text of other speeches as they are made available to me. Good morning, Mayor Potter. That's Portland, Oregon's Potter. And members of the City Council, my name is Wesley Flowers, and I sleep outside. On Sunday night, I slept at the Salvation Army Harbor Light Center's 90-bed extended shelter, which this administration provided as a response to the protest outside. And I'm appalled that you would even suggest that someone sleep in those conditions. 2-foot-wide mats on the floor scrunched up next to each other with no shower facilities and blankets that go reused and unwashed until they're so dingy they get thrown out and replaced with new to begin the cycle of wasteful resource management and a public health hazard all over again. Those hardly qualify as beds. I'm less likely to get sick outside. I'm less likely to get scabies outside. I'm less likely to get rolled onto, slept on, and drooled over if I don't have the same guy 6 inches on either side of me. These are inhuman conditions. The sit, lie, and urban camping quality of life ordinances, quote-unquote, have already been found unconstitutional by the Ninth Circuit, that's the Jones decision, and people still have to sleep. There are not enough beds for the people that want them, and those that are available on a limited basis are unsanitary and overcrowded, and even those who are sleeping in those beds are not afforded enough time to get a good night's sleep. To criminalize the act of sleeping in a public place due to lack of other available or rationally dignified options could be nothing other than cruel and unusual punishment, which was the basis of the Jones decision's overturning of L.A.'s sleeping ban. This is turning a social problem into a criminal one, and that simply doesn't make any sense. Considering that Portland is only one out of 97 cities with virtually identical programs, it also seems that there is a state of class criminalization and permanent displacement for millions of people nationwide. This is not coincidence. This is premeditation, and it is looking more and more like social cleansing based on policies that induce an economic apartheid, and it sickens me that this could possibly be going on in my country. The 10-year plan was developed 3 years ago, while 6 months ago we experienced the beginning of a recession, which is looking increasingly like a depression. And the 10-year plan, that's what Mike Rhodes was talking about, the 10-year plan for housing first, is not equipped to respond to that contingency. You cannot truly focus on permanent housing first when the country is in the middle of a housing crisis and record job loss. People are coming onto the streets faster than the 10-year plan ever envisioned, and they are being swept around like trash and forced into the criminal justice system faster than they can figure out what to do. This is not right. Social cleansing is a crime against humanity, and this needs to stop now. Is this the legacy you're planning on leaving behind, your last few months in office, hounded by bums, quote-unquote, demanding that they at least be afforded the most basic of human rights, the opportunity to get a good night's sleep, a potential federal lawsuit for the incoming mayor to deal with in his first term? Repeal the sit, lie, and camping ordinances and establish a green zone now, not tomorrow, today. And that's a speech by Wesley Flowers. But we have a phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. This is John Tilking.
Hey, John. What's cooking?
I was just very glad to hear the decision about what happened in Fresno.
Yeah, me too. I'm hoping we'll get more details on it on Sunday.
Yeah, I have kind of a sort of a tangential topic to bring up.
Okay.
It's about the anti-war stuff.
Uh-huh.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, did you happen to see the 60 Minutes show this last Sunday?
No. Tell me about
it. They had an interesting piece on there. It's still on their website. The video is still on their website if you Google for CBS 60 Minutes.
Uh-huh.
And it talks about the microwave weapon they developed. It's a non-lethal weapon designed to disperse troops on the battlefield, but theoretically it could also be used, and they do admit on the program, they admit that it could be used to disperse protesters as well.
Right.
What it does is it causes such an intense microwave burst in front of the person that it causes them to feel like they're going to get burned. So they move out of the way.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, we're talking whether it's rubber bullets or tasers or pepper spray. A lot of these non-lethal, so-called non-lethal or less than lethal weapons are turned and can prove lethal are turned on protesters regularly, or at least.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure how practical it's going to be in the long term, because unless they make it illegal to export screen wire, it'd be very easy to just make up a piece of screen wire that fits over your whole body, like make it look like the front of your microwave oven, and you know, just that size of screen wire would probably protect you. So.
Well, then they could use something else, like shoot you with lead or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Or rubber, or you know, just come in with tasers, or just.
Yeah, I don't
know. Not sure if screen wire would protect you from that. It would
protect you from the microwaves, though. It wouldn't protect you from the other stuff.
You know, but it's interesting that, you know, a lot of, there are some people who are preparing to go to the Democratic and Republican conventions to protest the, you know, the fact that both parties have no intentions or plans to end the Iraqi occupation and war. Yeah. and no opposition to the expansion of the war to Iran. And, you know, but a lot of people are, the majority of people, the millions that hit the streets in 2003 have apparently disappeared into their homes or into their, you know, hovels or something because they're not around.
And all the Barack Obama supporters?
Yeah, some of them are supporting Barack Obama. Some of them have given up supporting anybody. I don't know what's happened to folks. I guess the main feeling is that they had the illusion that brief mass protests would accomplish something, and when it didn't, they gave up.
Yeah.
And I'm not just speaking about, you know, people under. I mean, I have not been out there. I didn't show up at the. I was invited to go to the longshoremen's protest on. There was an actual one-day strike against where a longshoreman up and down the coast refused to move goods to Iraq. And I didn't go up there to that particular protest. I probably would have a couple of years ago. So I too suffer from this kind of malaise.
Yeah, I'm kind of limited myself because I'm running out of money and I don't have enough money to get a new tire for my car or put gas in the car, so I can't really go a lot of different places. But if it's a local thing like in San Jose, I would definitely go to wherever it is that they're having something.
Have you heard anything about the case of Curly Estramira and any other activists who are on trial recently? I know that we tried to
all
get...
All I know about Curly is that he had some medical problems that he was trying to deal with. I didn't hear whether... Yeah. I heard that he got into trouble with some kind of sheriff's deputy, off-duty sheriff's deputy at one of the medical clinics.
Right.
He was apparently the guy maced him or something, and he counterattacked with a trash can and got charged with attacking a police officer, like that.
Yeah, I know also that, you know, we tried to get Brian Helmley of the Cinco de Mayo, I guess East Palo Alto 6 or whatever they called themselves, and we had him on the air once, but recently charges were dropped. We hope to have more from him, and he kept promising to call, but he never was able or apparently never chose to do that. So I don't know what happened with him. Anything else happening over in, is there still a cop watch in San Jose? Is there a food
bombs?
No,
there's Debug. Debug actually has a much bigger and nicer office now than they did before. It's moved to a different location, but it looks like it's a really nice place now. It looks like they actually have some financial backing of some kind. So it looks like they'll manage to hang in there.
Yeah, Debug is a website that is a
Debug
kind of
is a magazine.
Online magazine, right?
It's a as far as I know, I thought they were just in print, but I'm not sure if they have an online thing
or
not.
Yeah, they do. I think so. Debug, I'm taking a look here. Yeah, let's see. Debug, now it's a command. Yeah, that was actually where I first heard of I heard about the Brian Helmley case. I got that partially through Indie Media. And partially through this. People of San Jose. Yeah, SiliconValleyDebug.org is the website for those who are interested in going to the home page. And there are numerous articles. Daughter of man tased to death, marches for justice, and announces $20 million lawsuit by David Madden. Block-to-block radio, apparently, which is maybe there's a free radio in San Jose.
There's a kind of a... I think that's either on one of the college radio stations or one of the other low-power FM stations down here that has block-to-block on it. I don't remember exactly the call letters or the number for that one.
Maybe what I'll do is I'll play this audio. It looks like that's doable.
Yeah.
And I thank you for calling in, John. Any other announcements you want to make?
I think we got it covered for now.
Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, I'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Here's... Here's another phone call, actually. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Leela.
Hey, Leela. You had some comments about the mental illness system or the
so-called mental health system. First, I wanted to thank you, though, for all the work you've done through the years on human rights, and I nominate you for the Nobel Peace Prize. And you've always been like a big brother to me and a lot of people, so I just wanted to thank you. And I just want to give an example of how the so-called mental health system sucks people in, chews them up, and spits them out, usually worse than they started. And early December, I've been treated by, I'm not give the name on the air, and
because I don't want to get in trouble for slander or anything.
No,
but
feel free.
Certain,
feel free if you feel like it, but, you know.
Well, a certain psychiatrist has been treating me off and on through the years, and he was my appointed psychiatrist at the county. And he had me on a handful of pills, chemical cocktail, 2-3 times a day, and one of them was lithium. And he's supposed to have my blood checked once a month to check the lithium level, because if you go toxic from lithium, it's very hard to turn it around. That's what a doctor told me, because your body absorbs it very fast. And what I was living in a social rehab program, so-called social rehab program in Santa Cruz, and all I remember is walking down the driveway, and the next thing I fell straight over and hit my head very hard and knocked me out. And the next thing I knew, I was in the intensive care in Dominican Hospital, and I was going in and out of consciousness. I was in a coma for most of 2 days. I didn't know where I was. Every time I woke up, I'd ring the nurse, and she'd come, and I'd say, "Where am I?" And I'd pass out before she could tell me. And it was very serious. I had a huge, like, plastic donut of blood around my waist, and they were giving me constant transfusions. And this all happened because the doctor, the psychiatrist, hadn't had my blood checked in 3 months, and I went toxic. Meanwhile, my daughter's calling the social rehab. They wouldn't tell her where I was. Finally, someone lied and told her that I had OD'd on lithium, and she was very, very upset. And I was very, very upset when I heard about that more than anything. And after 3 days, they sent me back to the social rehab place, but the doctor was negligent, and so was the social rehab people, because after I got back, people told me that I wasn't really with it, you know, that they could tell something was wrong, and those people are supposed to watch out for us, and they didn't do anything till I had that seizure, and as a result, I'm going to have to go to a neurologist because I'm shorting out all the time. My motor controls are blown. And I know a man who had the same doctor. And let me tell you, those psychiatrists, they think their drugs are the be-all and end-all of everything, and they tend to overprescribe. They've even told me it's better to overprescribe than underprescribe.
Well, it keeps you doped up, you know, that's the deal.
Yeah, and plus they get kickbacks from some of the drug companies for prescribing new drugs.
You sure you don't want to name this doctor?
Well, okay, I'll name his name. Maybe if there's anybody he's treated out there and mistreated, his name is Dr. Paul Luther. He's worked at Dominican. Now he works at the county. And he acts like you're his best friend, and he conveniently went out of town after this all was happening. So nobody really realized what was going on until until I got to the hospital and they found out I was toxic.
Now, are you competent? I mean, do you have any kind of guardianship restrictions on you?
Well, I just have a payeeship where my Social Security disability check is sent to a payee, but I'm working on getting away from that and getting a different psychiatrist, even though I really, you know, I could...
And you have your own power of attorney, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so if you wanted to you could try to get an attorney to sue this doctor if you wanted
well,
to.
What I was going to say was this other man I know was OD'd on a drug called Zyprexa, and he won, and now he against that same doctor, and now he's buying a mobile home.
Huh. You can get him to
so I don't really care about the money in a lawsuit.
Well, I think what you want to do is you want to make the doctor pay a price and maybe be more cautious and have other doctors be more cautious about this. You know, if you can get this guy to call into the show and talk about his case, I'd like to know more about it.
Well, I might be able to do that, but what I wanted to say is I don't really care about getting money off this doctor, but I want him exposed and for the next guy that he tries to do that
to. Well, that's what you're doing here, but also often the way to expose a person more is indeed to make it a money issue, because a lot of people don't understand anything, particularly doctors and professionals.
Well, I'm looking for a lawyer, and today I went to Legal Aid, and they gave me a waiver of the $40 fee it takes to get a lawyer through lawyer's referral. But you can probably tell by the way I'm talking, I'm just not quite the same as I used to be.
Well, you sound a little tired.
Well, I was working today. I work for in home support services to help other disabled people. But I am tired, and but I'm glad to have a chance to say this, and that's just an example of what's going on, and it's very dangerous. And I was like, I felt like I died. I could hear people, but I couldn't see anything. It was all darkness when I was in the coma, but I could hear people talking. And I heard my so-called social worker telling the doctor to put me in the mental health unit. And the doctor said, no way, she's almost dead, and you want me to do that? And so I guess I'm lucky I made it. Sometimes I look around the world and I think, oh, too bad I made it. But I guess, you know, people like you make it worth it.
People like you, Leela, who expose what goes on, give hope to people who are, you know, struggling with these kinds of problems and believe that their only alternative is to go get medication from psychiatric doctors. And that's not necessarily to say that's always the wrong thing to do, although I definitely have a prejudice against that. But it's really important to have a real understanding of potential side effects, to have some other options, which, you know, Santa Cruz County does not provide. There's, you know, billions of dollars, millions, if not billions, going into the pharmaceutical industry around this issue. And instead of there being alternate, you know, responses to this, people who are labeled mentally ill are considered to be a brain diseased or have some kind of chemical imbalance, which has not been shown to be, you know, truly the case in any kind of definitive scientific way. And that, of course, is an issue that Thomas Zaz writes a lot about that I tend to be sympathetic to. But even above and beyond that, there's the issue of the kind of whether the chemical treatments, whatever the cause of people's distress, does it actually help? Are the chemical treatments actually set you up, the pharmaceutical treatments, for even worse conditions later on by increasing dopamine receptors or serotonin blockers? I may have that backwards.
Well, most of those drugs have side effects a mile long, and they don't even know all the side effects of the newer ones.
But even the side, I'm not even talking about the side effects. I'm talking about the main impact of these drugs seems to be to alter the brain chemistry that makes people more vulnerable to the kinds of seizures that, you know, cause the suffering and disorientation. That's a real problem. That's what Robert Whitaker found. Actually, the World Health Organization found that out, and Robert Whitaker documented it in his book, Mad in America. We've had him on the show a couple times. I'm actually trying to get him on again.
Wow.
Leela, I appreciate your calling in, and I would encourage anybody else who's had problems with Dr. Luther or any of the other local shrinks, particularly in the dramatic way you've had, or problems with, you know, being treated in a fashion where they're not getting the right to refuse medication, which they should have under the Reese hearings and the Reese decisions, or the right to get a writ of habeas corpus hearing if you're being held on a 5150, get in touch, give a call to Huff, and I'll try to refer you to...
Can I leave you a personal message?
Let me finish the spiel. And the spiel is 423-HUFF is the number to call. And I believe Jane Kaiser is also still involved in this activity.
Yeah, I just talked with her tonight.
And 475, I believe her number is 475, is it, do you have her number?
Yeah.
What is it?
4757904.
I wasn't sure of the last two digits. 4757904. Jane Kaiser's been working to maintain a communication with people inside psych wards and fight forced psychiatric drugging, forced incarceration, and so forth. And
if a person wants to take the drugs and they feel it's helping them, that's fine. But you should be able, and it's supposed to be a free country. Of course, we all know there's a lot of lies. But, you know, if a person feels like this is making me feel like shit, they shouldn't have to do it. Your body is telling you something. you know?
Yeah, exactly. And there is, of course, increasing pressure on parents to medicate their kids and on institutions to medicate people. And it's you know, unfortunately, it looks like the black wave of the future, which we have to fight. You wanted to say something else, I believe, and then I'm going to roll because we've got about 12 minutes
I'll
left.
Leave you a message on the house number, okay, Robert?
Sounds good.
Thank you for letting me talk.
Thanks for talking.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Last 12 minutes of the show. I was going to play this, maybe not too much time, but let's listen to the daughter of the man tased to death, marches for justice, and announces $20 million lawsuit. We have tasing in Santa Cruz, of course, and no meaningful controls on that. You have to trust the internal processes of the police department and the collaborative city council's public safety committee, Rotkin, Porter, and Coonerty. I believe they're still the safety committee that now supposedly oversees the police department.
Caller on line one.
Our healthcare system is gradually, step by step, being completely destroyed in this country.
I'm not saying that I'm against development at all, but what I'm saying is that I believe development should be for people in the community.
And now it's time for America's favorite daytime fun show,
Blood Radio!
You never hear this stuff on mainstream radio.
91.5 FM, KKUP.
I got Noreen Salinas in the house, and she lost her father a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I got Chip Lyas in the house. How are you guys doing this morning?
Good, good.
We're doing fine, thank you.
And they're in the studio today. They're going to be wording us up on a march and a rally that's going to be going down this Monday. But Noreen, if you could, you know, I want you to, if you can, you know, give a little background on why is there going to be a march this Monday.
Hi, how you doing? Well, for those who don't know the story, I'll just break it down a little bit. My dad was killed and murdered by the San Jose PD last year, May 25th. So since then, I've been coordinating the Salinas campaign. I've been doing certain movements based around my father's death for police accountability within the city of San Jose. And this Memorial Day, I believe it's the 26th, we are having a march and rally for police accountability. And then later on, a visual candlelight, you know, for my father, mm-hmm. in remembrance of his death, and for all the other families who have been victims of police brutality within the city of San Jose and everywhere else. Mm. And it's going to be really nice, a good thing. So everybody come together and as one, as a family, and fight for justice.
All right. And where are folks going to meet at? Just to let folks know, I believe you guys are going to be meeting at Lenzen, 701 Lenzen.
That's correct.
Debug?
Mm-hmm. At the Debug office, 701 Lenzen Avenue, catty corner to Stockton Street, for those who are not familiar with the address.
All right. And what time are folks going to meet up there?
4:30.
The march is set to start at 5. We're going to be having a small convening reception at 4:30. Those involved in planning or anybody that wants to volunteer, we're asking to be there at 3:30. So, yeah, we're going to set out on foot at 5 o'clock down Stockton Avenue to Santa Clara and then march all the way down Santa Clara to City Hall.
To City Hall.
That's correct. Uh-huh. We're going to do it again. It's going to be bigger and better, the movement. We have many more complaints about the city of San Jose, the police department. We have a lot of victims that are going to come together with us and join us this time.
You know, a lot of folks may not even be aware, but, yeah, there are a lot of people that are coming out now. A lot of people are just getting tired of the abuse. You know, We got a lot of racial profiling. I mean, it's been going on for years. This is nothing new. But what's new is it seems like people are just tired of it.
Well, what's worse, I think, is, you know, police brutality has always been around. That's kind of why the police are able to stay the police. But, you know, nowadays, they're not even really hiding the fact or the facts of what it is that they're trying to do. Mm. I mean, city hall notes and meeting minutes become available. And, you know, they're posting messages on blogs that carry a sincere air of, you know, a desire to gentrify the city.
Mm.
And, you know, there have been comments made by certain council people who shall remain nameless for the sake of my own safety, suggesting that, you know, kids shouldn't be in the downtown area. They should be this is an actual quote. He said they should be at home writing graffiti on stuff.
Wow.
And
amazing.
And that until graffiti artists are being caned and drug dealers are being publicly hung, we're going to have this problem in San Jose. And these are direct quotes. This is not, you know, misinterpretation or extrapolation or any of the fancy words that they like to throw at us and think we don't understand them.
Mm.
It's just a very scary situation. And now, you know, specifically with the tasers, you have this idea that the taser was supposed to be the safer alternative to shooting people. And what's happening now is if you're unarmed and the police don't think that they can subdue you, you get tased. People are being tased on infractions like jaywalking. This is happening in San Jose right now and all over the country.
What's even scarier, too, are there's people that are already in custody that are getting tased. Handcuffs on them, laying on the floor face down, and are still subject of getting tased.
That's correct. And pretty much it sounds like a lot of similarities to my dad's autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
They had him face down. He wasn't able to put up a struggle. The funny thing is, and I'll just lay something out real quick, they said that he tried to fight them back. Well, how do you figure if you're hogtied and you're tied up and faced on your stomach where you can't even, you can't do anything, you can't fight back? So, I don't know. I just like to address that. How do you figure? So, you know, I don't like to call anybody out like that, but I just had to lay that one
down.
I had to put it out there.
Now, is there any websites or are there any phone numbers if, say, folks want to get involved with the movement here?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they want to learn more about the march. They want to get involved.
Of course, yes. We do have a number. And matter of fact, I'll go ahead and provide that number right now. You just give me a second.
All right.
Or go ahead, Chip.
Well, first, you can always reach us by email at Silicon Valley Debug, or SVDebug, sorry, at newamericamedia.com. That's SV, which stands for Silicon Valley, and then Debug, D-E-B-U-G, at newamericamedia.com. And you can receive all types of information via the email. You can go to our website at www.siliconvalleydebug.org. Or you can reach us by phone at area code 408-971-4965.
All right, now, and you know, just for the listener's sake, maybe they want to know a little bit more about your father's case.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't mind, could you go ahead and, you know, walk through what happened to your father, the scenario of the case?
Sure. Well, I could just explain a little bit in detail real quick. Last year, on May 25th, my father was at a hotel located on First Street with his girlfriend, not a wife. He was actually no longer married. Mm-hmm. They were actually separated. He was in there. They had their own room. He was stepping out of the shower. There was a complaint, I guess. They couldn't pinpoint the room, which room the noise was coming from, a disturbance call.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens? The cops end up at my father's door. The girlfriend answers the door. They pull her out by the arm, right in front of her, you know, my father's pretty much no clothes on whatsoever, wet, coming out of a shower. You know, they tase him and pretty much beat him to death. And it's written all over the autopsy. Me and my lawyer, we right now have a multi-million-dollar civil suit going on right now with the city. Taser International. So, as a matter of fact, there's another case right now. from a man, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, David, but a man from Salinas, he got tased and beaten to death by the police.
Wow.
So actually it was San Jose police, from what we were told. And the case is going down here in Santa Clara County. So there's a lot of similarities.
So this is happening.
Violence going on.
This is happening.
That's.
And there's actually more to this interview. It's you can find it by going to Debug, the online magazine of the South Bay. Daughter of man tased to death marches for justice and announces $20 million lawsuit. Debug, D-E-B-U-G. This has been Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and that's about it for tonight. I'm going to give Uncle Dennis a head start. He's coming up with From the Cream to the Dregs next on Free Radio. I'll be coming back on Sunday with more information, specifically cameras on you while you pee in 41st Avenue. You want to read about that, you can go online, get a sneak peek, so to speak, what that's all about. Tim Rumford has done a little expose about the issue. And that's on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz if you want to check that out. Hopefully we'll be coming back with an update from Mike Rhodes, who you heard at length today, on the actual final settlement in Fresno. And if you want to come and be a part of the real process of ending the kind of discrimination, harassment, and criminalization that happens in Santa Cruz for poor people and homeless people, come to the Human Rights Organization meeting, 2 o'clock on Saturday, 131 Front Street at the Firefly Cafe. And in the meantime, if you want to give me a call if anything's happened that you want people to know about, or you want me to know about, or perhaps you want to be on the air and talk about it, give me a call on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. This show is archived, as are past shows, at www.huffsantacruz.org under the name of the show, Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. Thanks for being with me. Thanks for listening. And for those of you who called in, thanks for calling in. Those of you who didn't, think of calling in if you've got something you want to say or some thoughts about what's happened. We'll also have updates on the Donna Dice case and some discussion of the lawsuit against the city council in the false arrest for making a mock Nazi salute 6 years ago, which has actually generated a lot of discussion on the Santa Cruz Sentinel website. Thanks for being with me. Come back on Sunday, and most important, do something between now and Sunday to help end the war in Iraq. Obama's not going to do it, folks. Nor is McCain. You've got to do it and help end the war against the poor by standing up and just saying no.
Do you like to pull the band-aid quick or slow? Do you like to be the first or last to know? Is there someone you could phone so you won't be here alone as you learn about your future blow by blow? Did you ever have the feeling something's died? Did you ever notice nothing left inside? If I told you I was spent, would you wonder what it meant as we wander through the silence side by side? I could never tell what you were thinking. Maybe if we talked a little less and listened more, every day that passed I felt us sinking. Deeper than I ever sank before. I'll be coming in the morning for my life, and I hope that you'll forgive the twisted knife. But when it comes right down to it, we just never really fit, and I wish you better luck with your next wife. You're a lovely boy, Dad, such a lovely boy. There's a lovely girl out there still waiting. You deserve some joy, Dad, you deserve some joy. You're a lovely boy, Dad, you're a lovely boy. Have you ever simply lost your appetite? Or thought of never coming home one night? That would really end it well. It's a story you could tell, and you could finally tell your mother she was right. You're a lovely boy, Dad, such a lovely boy. There's a lovely girl on the horizon. There's a world to join, Dad. There's a world to join. You're a lovely boy, Dad. You're a lovely boy. There is nothing I can say to ease the burden. Everything to store your hurt in, and I'll give you alimony for at least a couple years. You're a lovely boy, such a lovely boy. I was not as lovely as you needed, and I filled the void, Doug. I just filled.
And it's Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to invite you to stay tuned for the next 3 hours for more music from the 60s and the 70s on From the Cream to the Dregs. Robert is standing in the wings, just about ready to exit the studios. And you will be back 9:30 on Sunday morning with more Bathrobe Spears broadsides. Don't ask him what he's wearing under that bathrobe. You don't want to know. Anyway, we're going to get started here with some Savoy Brown.
with smoking of the noble weed. You need much more than him. You've been telling lies so long, some believe they're true. So they close their eyes to things you have no right to do. Just as soon as you are gone, hope will start to climb. Please don't stay around.